DiscerningHearts.com presents Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I'm delighted to be joined by Father Joseph Fezzio, who is the editor-in-chief of Ignatius Press. He is a longtime personal friend of Joseph Ratzinger, Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI, who served as Father Fezzio's doctoral director and mentor at the University of Regensburg in then West Germany. As a member of Ratzinger's group of former students, Father Fezzio participated in many of the yearly three-day-long gatherings of that group. Every year, from 1989 to present, Father Fezzio has traveled to Rome for the annual meeting of the directors of Casa Balthazar, a house of formation in Rome, which takes its inspiration from the life and works of two theologians who were highly regarded by and close friends of John Paul II and Benedict XVI. Father André de Lubach, made a cardinal by John Paul in 1983, and Father Hans Urs von Balthasar, named cardinal by John Paul II in 1988. With Father Joseph Fezzio, we go inside the pages of The Transforming Power of Faith by Pope Benedict XVI, published by Ignatius Press. A few months before his historic resignation on February 11, 2013, Pope Benedict proclaimed a year of faith for the Church, an important opportunity for Christians to reflect upon and deepen the life of faith within them, to renew their belief in and relationship with Jesus Christ, the one Savior of the world, and to revive, as the Holy Father said, the joy of walking on the path He pointed out to us and bear witness to the transforming power of faith. Faith means taking the transforming message of Christ into our lives, receiving the revelation of God who makes us know that He exists, how He acts, what His plans for us are, and how much He loves and cares for us. These last audiences of Pope Benedict XVI are His parting public gift to the Church. We now begin our conversation with Father Joseph Fezzio on The Transforming Power of Faith by Pope Benedict XVI. Father Fezzio, thank you so much for joining me.
Sure, Chris. Good to be here.
Talking about the transforming power of faith, especially at a time when we come to the historic end to the year of faith, it seems so apropos that especially we would have the words of wisdom from Pope Benedict XVI, emeritus now.
That's right. And, you know, he called this year of faith in connection with the 50th anniversary of the Vatican Council. And he himself interrupted, as he said, his audiences on prayer to be able to give audiences specifically on the question of faith. It's interesting because at the beginning, with October 2012, when he begins these ones on faith, he says it's just an interruption. He'll get back to the ones on prayer. But he not only didn't get back to the ones on prayer, he really didn't finish what he was going to do on faith. This is kind of a beginning introduction, but one of the things he wants to do is comment on the creed. But he only gets as far as the first couple of phrases of the creed before he resigns. However, I don't consider it an incomplete work because he was also drafting, you know, an encyclical on the faith. And we know that Pope Francis issued his first encyclical, and clearly it was mainly done by Ratzinger, which I thought was a beautiful sign of continuity of Pope Francis accepting all the work that Pope Benedict had done and making it his own. But I really think the two documents have to go together. The transforming power of faith, this beautiful introduction to faith, and then the encyclical on the light of faith. And with those two, we really have a beautiful, beautiful teaching in the year of faith that's going to be important even beyond the year of faith, because faith itself is the foundation of our life.
And it's so compelling that in the pages that we do have, and at the wonderful audiences that he was able to give to us, he talks about the nature of God. And how profound is that? I mean, no wonder it's a book unto itself, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, if we look back at the origins of the intellectual activity of Joseph Ratzinger, who became Cardinal Ratzinger, and Pope Benedict, we see that he's always been interested in getting down beneath the surface into the foundations, fundamental ideas, fundamental concepts. I mean, even his first real book after he'd done his doctorate and his Habilitation, which is a second doctorate in Germany, was called Introduction to Christianity. And it was a collection, basically, of the course he gave, you know, lectures he gave on a course about Christianity. And there again, he's commenting on the creed. He's explaining what faith is, relating it to the modern culture, which sees science as kind of the standard for knowledge. And so even there, he's talking about the foundations of our life as Christians, as our life as human beings. And then here, after this long intellectual life as a professor and then as a bishop and teacher, he gives us kind of condensed distillate, if you will, of all of that experience and all of his wisdom about this foundational, this fundamental, you know, reality, which is faith. So it's a real gift. And I just think it just stands out as a little jewel among the many other treasures that he's given us.
You had mentioned that he had interrupted his teachings on prayer to begin this discourse, essentially, on faith and reflection on the creed. And if I'm not mistaken, our creed was actually lifted up at the Synod of the New Evangelization to be the prayer that we would ponder. So actually, he's leading us in this beautiful way from just one transition into another. And it really is quite, in that, there's a seamlessness.
Yeah, that's true. And there's also something that we can, I think, look at a little standing back a bit. You know, of course, we've been very fortunate as Catholics in the last 30 years or so and more to have extraordinary popes. I mean, you think of John Paul II and who he was and what he did and his great teaching. What a blessing that was for the Church, even though during the very same time there were scandals, there were problems, there was confusion after the council and so on. And yet we had this wonderful, gregarious, beloved, strong leader who was also quite an intellectual. And then he passes on and Cardinal Ratzinger, who has been his probably principal collaborator, becomes Pope. And here we have some, I think, will go down as one of the greatest theologians and teachers in the papacy. I mean, even when he became Pope, he already had this, you know, great body of writing that was there, and people became interested in that. And then he wrote more while he was Pope. And again, he wrote on the foundations. What was his first encyclical? God is love. You know, and then the second one is on hope. And the third one was on, you know, Caritas in Veritate, love as it expressed, you know, in our activities for others, kind of the social teaching. And then he prepared the one on faith. So here we've kind of come back to our sources as Christians and as Catholics with two wonderful popes. And now we have a third pope. And it's interesting, Chris, that there's been kind of a shift in the way teaching is done. Now, Francis, of course, did write an encyclical, but that was really Benedict's encyclical.
Mm-hmm.
What's he doing? His homilies, his kind of offhand remarks, his interviews on airplanes and things like that, those are becoming a form of reaching even more widely than a papal document. And here's something I found very interesting just this week. You know, there was a lot of speculation that Pope Francis was going to change the Church's position on whether divorced and remarried Catholics could receive communion because of a remark he'd made on the, I believe, either on the plane or that Scalfaro interview he did with the editor of Republica in Rome.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just yesterday, the head of the Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith, Ludwig Müller, Cardinal Müller, or Archbishop, I think he's still an Archbishop, maybe. Anyway, Archbishop Müller, he wrote a long article basically reaffirming the Church's teaching here and saying that mercy, which the Pope Francis has emphasized so much, does not mean we don't recognize sin as sin and realize it needs repentance, and we have to follow the church's norms on these things. So clearly, and this obviously Pope Francis had to know what was being said in this article, but what I find particularly interesting is not just that it clarifies Pope Francis's own position to make clear that it is not somehow a deviation from the norm and tradition, but secondly, it wasn't an official magisterial document. It was written as an article in the Osservatore Romano, which is basically a newspaper. It's the church's newspaper for sure. Mm-hmm. But so here we have, after John Paul II and Benedict, with their magisterial teaching that was done primarily in these documents, we have Francis spreading that teaching more broadly and more popularly by his homilies and by his interviews. And then even we have a Vatican dicaster, a Vatican office, a very important one at that, clarifying things not in another document, but in a newspaper article. So it's we're in for interesting times, but I have to say it's a great time to be a Catholic because we have leaders we can really look up to and admire. And the Church, for all her troubles and for all the scandals, certainly stands above all the bickering and dysfunction of our political, circles in this country and other countries as being a real beacon of light and of hope. So I'm happy. But Chris, I kind of wondered, you're talking to an old man who kind of likes to keep telling stories here.
Well, I love your stories, Father Fezzio, and so does everyone else, because you've had the opportunity to essentially sit at the feet of a master as a student of, at the time, Cardinal Ratzinger, and Pope, now we know, is Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI. But what is it like for you to have, not only for that time of transition, but for it to move into the sphere of a brother Jesuit? I mean, did that just surprise you now that it's been several months out, to digest all
well,
that?
Well, I mean, I think it surprised everybody, and it was the first, obviously. The first pope really outside of Europe for a long time. And even though he's connected to Europe as being an Italian immigrant, his parents were. I think it's interesting. Ignatius, who was the founder of the Jesuits, was not a theologian. Mm-hmm. He was a mystic in the sense that he was very close to God in his prayer. And I think mystics are very practical, because there's nothing more practical than being close to the creator and sustainer of the universe who knows all the laws. But Ignatius did not write any theological treatises, but he encouraged Jesuits to form themselves intellectually under two kind of streams of thought. One, the great patristic heritage, the fathers of the church, Greek and Latin fathers, Augustine and Jerome and Origen and Gregory of Nyssa and all those people. Mm-hmm. But he also wanted us to learn the scholastic philosophy that was primary in theology that was, exemplified best by St. Thomas Aquinas. So Ignatius wanted us to learn to do God's will, but prepare ourselves intellectually by drawing on these resources. Well, I think Francis, being a good Ignatian Jesuit, is not himself a theologian, is not himself going to produce new doctrines, but he is going to take us back to the Gospels, to Christ himself, and to the great tradition, the Catholic intellectual tradition that has gone before him. And as I look back now on my, so far, getting longer life, I see that the mid-20th century, mid to three-quarters of the 20th century, were a real time of intellectual giants for the Church. I mean, not just Ratzinger, but Balthasar, de Lubac, Boyer, Congar, Rahner. I mean, these were people who profoundly contributed to the Church's self-understanding, and her understanding of the world, and also had a tremendous influence on the Council. And we've got intelligent people, good teachers, but we don't have giants, I don't think, like they were. And so we have this huge modern patrimony, not the old fathers of the Church, but I would call them the new fathers of the Church. And Francis, the good Jesuit, is really asking us to draw upon that patrimony. So it's, again, it's an exciting time. We've got new evangelization. We've got wonderful bishops being appointed. That's the best thing, by the way. You know, I think whatever Pope does, if he doesn't appoint good bishops, it's bad news for the people in the parishes and the dioceses. And we've had some wonderful, wonderful appointments in the last 5 or 10 years. Especially, I'm on the West Coast, and I have to say, we just have really great bishops out here. And I'm seeing already a great transformation in the life of the church.
Well, Father Fezzio, I mean, as a master communicator of many of those giants you've just spoke of, what is the challenge now to the communicators who are trying to disseminate this new way of speaking to the universal church?
Well, you know, there's one of the great fruits of the council, Chris, is you. I mean, you're a layperson, right? And look what you're doing. You're a communicator. You're trying to spread the faith. You're trying to, in your show, to look at these various writings that are, you know, contemporary and help pass those on and get people interested in them. So I think the answer to your question is to do just what you're doing, but each in his own way. I mean, look at Catholic radio. I mean, when I got an idea for Catholic radio back in 1997, I had a brilliant idea, which was a total failure. We totally failed on the thing. It was to start a big network of Catholic radio stations. And we had 7 to start with, but, it went under. There were only 6 or 7 others at the time. Well, since that time, there's more than 200 Catholic stations out there. And who's involved? Very few priests are involved. Mm-hmm. Very few religious sisters are involved or religious brothers. It's laymen. I mean, here in the West Coast, I mean, the one I'm most familiar with, of course, is Doug Sherman in Immaculate Heart Radio. I mean, he's done wonders out here. And then you get Relevant Radio. That was a wonderful layman that got that started. Ave Maria Radio. Now, EWTN, of course, is the kind of grandmother of it all. Mm-hmm. And that was a religious. That was Mother Angelica. But she made available the programming, the materials, the transmission ability, so that people like you and others, you know, could have a wider audience. And I just think that's great.
Well, and when you talk about someone like Mother Angelica, who really is that grandmother to us all, that trying to think outside of the box, I think that's what she was so wonderful at. And when Pope Benedict back in, I think it was May of 2010, he told people, you know, the church to go out into the digital sea, get out there. And it's helped to communicate, when you think online, the fact that you will be speaking to people not only in the United States, but through the archiving, because of the advent of the smartphone and tablets and everything else. You're talking to the church, the persecuted church in India, in China, Malaysia, the Congo, Africa, communicating in a way that we've never communicated and put that out. And that was another vision that Pope Benedict had.
That's right. You know something, Chris? We in America have both a special opportunity and a responsibility here. The fact is that America, for good or ill, has become the dominant force in the world, and linguistically, I mean, everybody's second language now is English. I mean, that's an exaggeration, but it's pretty close. So that, you know, we're able to penetrate everywhere in the world because people who are going to school are learning English. And they're interested in learning English. So they sing our songs, even our bad ones. But the material that can be produced by EWTN, by you and others, as you say, goes out to China, goes out to India, goes out to non-English-speaking Africa, it goes into Asia. But it's a beautiful opportunity, but also a responsibility, you know, to keep working at this, praying, because without prayer, it's not going to go anywhere, but keep working on communicating this great love that God has for us and what our response should be, which is faith, which, by the way, that gets back to this book we started with. This book is called The Transforming Power of Faith, and I call it the little legacy of Pope Benedict. It's the last writing we have from him alongside his contribution to the encyclical, The Light of Faith. So I really would recommend these on everybody's bookshelf. And you go to Ignatius.com and buy it, Ignatius.com.
I think it's wonderful. And I have to ask you, Father Fezzio, it's such a strange occurrence in the church because, and praise be to God, I mean, Pope Emeritus Benedict is not dead. He's still alive. He's still with us. I mean, do you ever have the opportunity to talk with him? I mean, it's an odd place to be in, isn't it?
It is. It's an odd, but it's a beautiful place. And actually, in this book, The Transforming Power of Faith, the last talk in the appendix is not one of his talks on faith. It's his last audience in which he explains why he has resigned and what it means and what he's going to do. And it's very beautiful. I mean, it's very touching and moving to read what he says there. But you asked a lot on the opportunity to see him. I'm traveling less and enjoying traveling. I mean, I'm enjoying the fact that I'm traveling less.
Mm-hmm.
But he does not want to be part of any kind of public activities. You know, I'm part of the Schuler Christ, a group of students that studied under him.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to meet with him every year, including while he was Pope. But this was the first year in August that he said, you know, he doesn't want to have the regular meeting with a seminar and a discussion because he wants to kind of step back from public activities. But he did celebrate Mass with the Schuler Christ. I wasn't there. But there's an opportunity to speak with him. I mean, next time I'm in Rome, I get there, I'll try and see him.
Well, we're very, very blessed again to have so much of his work that has been chronicled and archived and everything else by Ignatius Press. I mean, this is one of those things where, do you think it, I mean, people will be doing their doctoral dissertations just on the audiences of Pope Benedict?
No, I didn't foresee any of this, and it's actually, we don't want to be like David taking a census of Israel because he got a punishment for that. But I was just trying, out of curiosity, trying to figure out, well, how many books have we sold, you know, since 1978? And right around now, sometime this month, we're going to hit 25 million.
Oh my goodness!
So Ignatius Press has sold 25 million books or videos since that time, and those are all seeds out there, you know. I mean, I've got a little garden and a little vineyard, and I don't like weeds. And mm-hmm. I've got this one kind of weed called a plantain weed, and they're very hard to get out. They don't, even Roundup won't kill them. But one weed will produce 50,000 seeds. So even if one of these weeds gets by, mm-hmm. there's 50,000 seeds that are going to get spread around, and the darn thing's going to come up again. Well, those are bad seeds for us because they produce weeds. But books are good seeds. And to think that we have 25 million of these seeds out there, and they last, our books last for at least 700 years unless they're burned up or something, because we mm-hmm. use acid-free paper. You know, we bind them, we sew them. We make them things of beauty as well as books which contain, you know, valuable information. So I'm happy with the people here at Ignatius Press that we've been able to contribute that way to not just the present, but the future of the church. And it's, you know, I'm sure you've heard this, Chris. People listen to radio, they mm-hmm. turn it on, go through the dial, and they come back to the church, or they become Catholics. Those are seeds too, and it's just a beautiful testimony to the work that so many people are doing. That there are people out there loving God more, joining His church now because of radio broadcasts and books and television things for EWTN too. So it's a joy to be part of this, you know, ongoing passing on we've received. You know, we've received what Paul called the deposit of faith, and we've guarded it, but we haven't hoarded it. You know, we've dispersed it, and it's a joy to be part of that whole dispersal effort.
Well, Father Fezzio, you've been one of the main formators of those who are in endeavoring to help in that broadcasting. In its broadest sense, essentially, however God's going to continue to grow that. And I have to ask you, I mean, dare we hope that all may be saved?
That, for those listening who don't realize, this is the title of a book by Hans-Urs von Balthasar,
mm-hmm.
which has been the source of many, many misunderstandings. And I think it's a book worth reading. It's not an easy book, but it's good. But Balthasar's point there is not that hell is empty.
Mm-hmm.
Balthasar's point is that we can't take this attitude that, oh, well, I've been saved, thank God, but those other people are going to hell. We can't be sure how many are in hell or who is in hell, But we can be sure of this, that the most likely person to be there is me. That is, with all the gifts I've been given, with all the opportunities, have I responded? Am I really uniting myself to our Lord? And so we have to hope for our own salvation, but we should also hope that all men be saved, because that's what Jesus wanted. Jesus, God, sent his Son to redeem mankind. He wanted to save all. We have to respond to him, but his desire is, his will is, his intent is that all be saved. And we have to pray and hope. But hope does not mean some kind of false optimism.
Mm-hmm.
Hope means placing our confidence in the mercy of God and praying for all those who most need that mercy.
Mm-hmm.
Did that answer the question, Chris? I'm not sure. I'm a Jesuit, you know, so I try and skirt around things.
Well, I'm just a person who loves that book. So I'm glad to hear you say that. I'm glad to hear you say that. Father Fezzio, I wish we had more time. Any final thoughts?
Final thoughts. Well, I would just say to all those listening, support Catholic Radio, because others will be able to listen to. And also, we all have to nourish our faith. And good books and listening to good radio programs, you know, is a way of doing it. So I encourage people to do that.
Father Fezzio.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you so much. God bless.
God bless.
With Father Joseph Fezzio, we've gone inside the pages of The Transforming Power of Faith by Pope Benedict XVI. To learn more about this book or to obtain a copy, go to Ignatius.com, the website for its publisher, Ignatius Press, or you can find it at any fine Catholic bookstore. To hear and or to download this discussion along with many others, go to DiscerningHearts.com. This has been a production of DiscerningHearts.com. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join me next time for Inside the Pages, Insights from Today's Most Compelling Authors.